your pastors here. Man, so honored to be with you today. So excited to talk about what we're talking about today and to continue this storm series. Like Pastor Robert said, we're kind of in this series right now. We're taking a look back, taking a look ahead, trying to figure out what to do with all the things that we've experienced or seen over the last year. And if you've been with us from the beginning of this series, we started by just kind of reflecting. Week one, we just looked back and we thought, man, what do we do to respond? How do we heal from this? How do we move forward? And then last week, Pastor John Mark talked about what do we do to prepare when we see a storm coming? Like, how do we get ready? Because we know storms are going to come. What do we do to make sure we're ready when it comes again? And then next week, we'll talk about what to do in the aftermath. But I got invited to talk about what do we do in the midst of it? What do we do in the chaos? And I'm excited to talk to you about what we do in the chaos because I feel like sometimes I am the chaos. You know what I'm saying? And some of y'all might learn how to deal with me a little bit. But the question is, how do we respond in the midst of a storm? Because the truth is, they're going to come. And we can prepare perfectly for the storms, and we can know what to do afterwards, but if we don't know what to do in the midst of the chaos, we can end up a little bit lost. We're going to experience them, so we have to ask, when the rain is falling, when the waters are rising, what do we do, and how do we navigate the chaos? And the truth is, man, chaos is a tricky thing, right? It's tricky. Let's do a little survey, if you will. If you would, by a show of hands, how many of you have ever experienced chaos on any level? Okay, right? A few of you. Some of you just don't want to admit that you're in good company. It's fine. It is chaos. Maybe you have like four kids in your house that are all under the age of five, which I can't imagine what that would look like. But I do think that it would classify under the legal definition of chaos, right? Maybe you have a large and complicated family. That's more my situation. If I go home for Christmas, it can get wild, right? And it's a different brand of chaos. Maybe you're one of the lucky people that have ever set foot inside of a middle school cafeteria. If you have, you know what chaos looks and sounds and smells like sometimes, right? It's all around us. But this is obvious chaos, right? We know when we look at that, oh, that is chaos, and I don't want to be part of it if I can avoid it. But here's a question. Have you ever been surrounded by chaos, but you actually had no clue? Like you just didn't even know. You didn't appreciate the gravity of the situation. That's kind of how my Hurricane Helene experience started. And so I'm going to talk about kind of my journey over those few days, and I'll show some photos and things like that. So just be prepared for that. I know that these things are still heavy for me, and so they're probably still heavy for a lot of us, but I think if we can walk into that heaviness, man, God's going to honor it on the other side. And so the beginning of my Helene experience was very different than most people. See, I had this awesome opportunity the week before to speak at a conference, and so I was actually in Indiana the week before the hurricane. So I went on Monday. I was going to come back on Thursday when the conference ended. And at first thought I was like, well, I could leave early, but I was scheduled to speak at the very end of the conference. So I was like one of the last people. I left as early as I could, and that was at the end, right? So I taught this session, and immediately I left. I bet there were a lot of people who were thinking thoughts about why I left so fast, like, wow, man, it's like maybe communicate with the people a little bit. And like, I get it, but I also need to go home because there's this storm coming. And I didn't appreciate what it was going to be like, right? So I finished speaking. I get in the car. I'm driving back home. I do the normal stuff. I'm not in a rush yet, but I'm trying to like be efficient, you know? And so I'm kind of following the speed limit for the most part. And then but I'm still like at the same time stopping to get like good food, you know? And so I stop in Nashville to definitively prove to myself that Asheville hot chicken is better than Nashville hot chicken. Fight me. But anyway, like I stop there, I'm on my way home and I'm thinking I'm going to go all the way home. And I get a phone call from my wife and she says, hey, it looks like this thing is going to be a little worse than we thought. You should stop in Knoxville and stay the night there because you're not going to make it. You're not going to beat the storm home. And so I said, all right, cool. So she booked me a hotel. I stop in Knoxville. I realized I didn't pack enough clothes for an extra day, so naturally I had to go to Target. I went to Target. I got some food. I went back to the hotel. I hooked up my Xbox, played some video games, played with some Legos that I also bought from Target, and then I went to sleep. And I'm going to pause. I do travel pretty much everywhere I go with my Xbox. I know you guys were wondering. I do, okay? It brings me comfort and joy sometimes when I need it, especially when I'm alone, all right? And so I did that until I woke up the next day. It was raining in Knoxville, but it was just like raining in Knoxville, you know, like a Tuesday, like a normal rain. And so I'm like, all right, maybe I can go home. I call home, and I don't get an answer. It goes straight to voicemail. I'm not too worried about it. She said that the power might go out, and in that case, we weren't going to have cell phone service in our apartment because we never had cell phone service in our apartment. And so she would have to go outside to use the phone, like it was like horse times or something. I don't know. So she'd have to go outside to use the phone. And so I'm not really worried about it, but I am going to wait in Knoxville until she tells me that she thinks it's safe for me to come home. And so I'm waiting and waiting. She finally calls me. She says, hey, I think the worst of it is over. And you should be good to come home now. And I said, cool. So I get in the car, I go get some gas, I jump on the interstate, and I start heading towards Asheville. And I'm driving, I'm listening to some music. I think that, nope, there, maybe. Things are going well, I'm playing my Xbox in the car. I'm just kidding, I didn't do that. And so like I'm driving back towards home, and I've stopped at a grocery store or something that had a Starbucks because the GPS lied to me and said it was a regular Starbucks. So I pull in, I'm gonna go get some coffee. Right, you know, okay, thank you. Like you get it. And so I go in and I get some coffee from someone who definitely didn't wanna be there that day, and it was fine. So I'm back in the car, I'm driving, and I get a phone call from my mother-in-law, which is not a normal thing, but it's also not uncommon. So again, I don't think anything of it. And I'm just talking to her. She's like, well, I haven't heard from Ashley. Have you talked to her? I said, yeah, I talked to her for a few minutes. We don't have cell phone service in the house. Just leave her a message. She'll call you back. And my mother-in-law was like, cool. If she talks to you first, will you tell her to call me? Absolutely. Same thing. If she talks to you first, tell her to call me, but let her know I'll be home in 2 hours. And so I hang up the phone and I'm driving. I'm heading home. And right after that, I get the GPS notification that's like rerouting. And I'm like, wait, why? I'm going the right way. I know this. I've been here before. I came this way. I know this is the way home. And so it rerouted me, and I'm stubborn. I don't like that. I would rather spend a little bit more time in the car going the way that I know versus going some crazy like back road situation, right? So I'm like, no, I'm going the way that I want to go. And so I try to change it. It changes back. I try to change it again. It changes back. So naturally I download a different app so I can try something else. And I go a different way. And I'm like trying, and it keeps telling me to go this way. And so finally I'm like, fine, I'll go the way you want me to go, GPS, whatever. And so at this point I was in the midst of some chaos and I had no clue. I had no idea what was going on around me. I had no idea what the situation really was. And so I'm in this chaos and I start following this map. Like I have no clue where I'm at, no clue what's going on. And as I'm driving, I notice in the corner of the screen, so I'm driving like a different car and it has like real Apple CarPlay and not fake Apple CarPlay that my truck has. I notice in the corner of the screen, it says using offline maps. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. Why would we do that? Why would we use offline maps when we can use online maps? How do I fix it? So I'm trying to fix it. And then I realize that it's using offline maps because there is no online. Like, I have no cell phone service. But again, I'm on these back roads, and I just assume that I'm in part of Tennessee where cell phones haven't been invented yet. And so I continue to follow these offline maps and try to figure out where I'm going to go. But I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, I don't know where I am. I feel very unsafe. But at the same time, as long as I follow this map, I will be fine. I will make it home. And then it happened. I came to the first roadblock. It was a tree down in the road. I see all these cars making U-turns, and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. The only thing I know to do is I'll go back to Knoxville. I'll just retrace my steps. I'm pretty confident that I can do that. I think I've only made 3 turns at this point. And so I go back down to where I came from and I come to an intersection and I can go right to go back to Knoxville or I can go left into the unknown. But I see a sign in front of me that says Asheville, 35 miles that way. And I'm like, 35 miles is not that far. I'm gonna follow this sign. If there's a sign at 35 miles, there's probably one at 20 miles. And one at 10, and then I'll be home. And so I follow the sign because, again, I'm stubborn. I don't want to go back. And I end up in a town called Hot Springs. And when I get there, I need to go to the left. There's a green sign that says Asheville's that way. And so I look over, and I see this, and there is no going to the left. All right? Left turns are going to be hard. That's part of this. You're going to notice that a pattern in the story, right? Because there's this tree. There's this situation here. And then, so I'm going to go to the right. And I look to the right and I see this situation, which is like a down tree over the road. And I'm like, I can get under that. I was in a small rental car. We did pay for the insurance. I can certainly get under that. But it hits me at the time. It clicks in my head. I might be able to get under that. But if that power line gives way, which let's just be honest, is going to happen, there's no going back. So I have to make a decision. Am I going to keep going or am I going to turn around? I wasn't completely confident at this point that I knew where the back was. So I'm like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to do this. I'll make it. And so I keep going. And that's when I get to a situation where I'm driving on these back roads and these mountain roads. And I get to a part of the road that I now refer to as the hole. okay? And there was this cutout part of the road, and I'll be honest with you, this is not my photo. This is the closest photo I could find to what I saw because I didn't take pictures, guys. I was afraid for my life. And so there's this situation, but in the picture that actually happened, there was water underneath it, and so the river had widened to where if you went in the hole, you weren't going to land in that dirt pile. You were going to go swimming, and I didn't have a suit. So I went around that, but I'm nervous right at this point. I'm scared. I'm seeing all this destruction and chaos around me, and I'm finally starting to realize what this thing really was. And I get a little more nervous as I keep driving, and then I get to the point where things got really, really scary. And it was the point where I'm following this map, and I was somewhat confident but very nervous, and I get to a point where the road ends, and I'm on a dirt road. And I'm like, this cannot be right. This feels wrong. And I found out later that I was in this place called Max Patch, which I guess is a mountain somewhere out there. And I also found out later that I was like 10 minutes from Robert's house at this point. And so, for real. And so I get to this place called Max Patch. The road ends. I'm on a dirt road. I'm terrified. I'm like, this can't be right. And I look in front of me, and there's a minivan with what I assume is a family in it, because why would you be driving a minivan? And so I follow this minivan, and I think at least worst case scenario, we're in this thing together, and we can forge like a new community where we hunt and gather all of our own food, but we're together, right? And so we're driving. I'm following this van thinking maybe they're going the same place I'm going. There's strength in numbers, right? And then there's this truck that starts coming down the other way, and I'm getting nervous because, like, I think, you know, traditionally so far what that has meant is you can't go this way, and I'm out of options here. I'm, like, so convinced that either if I can't go forward that I live here now, okay? I live at Max Patch. And this truck stops and talks to the minivan, okay, and then they keep going. They didn't even get out to tell me what they found out. They just left me there. I'm like, we were in this, okay, whatever. And so I stop and talk to the truck. Well, I stop and he stops and he looks at me and I look at him and we just keep doing that for a while and it's really awkward and I'm like, one of us has to say something and I just look at him and I go, so how's it going? And then he starts to explain to me the events of the night before using language that I can or won't repeat. And at this point, I continue to remember that there's chaos. And he's talking about how many trees he's had to cut and all this stuff. And I said, well, thank you for your service, sir. And then I'm like, is there a way for me to get from here to Asheville? And he's like, yeah, you go up here. You're going to see a sign that says go to the right. You don't want to go to the right, go to the left. I said, okay. Left turns have not worked out for me thus far. You're telling me I should go to the left, not the right. Yeah, go to the left. You're sure? Yep, go to the left. So I get to the top. I go to the left against my better judgment, given the circumstances going on so far. And then I just kind of follow that for a while. And it's these back roads and there's more like things that I'm like, I don't know if I can go back past that. I don't know if I can come back. I don't know if these cars that are heading in the opposite direction are people that have been turned around or if they're just trying to get somewhere else, right? I don't know. It's all very, very uncertain. But finally, I see a sign that says I-40. And I'm like, oh, let's go. And I make it to I-40. I get on the interstate. I have thrown out the previously aforementioned regard for the speed limit, and I am on my way home. I'm about 2 or 3 miles before my exit to get off from my apartment, and 40 is closed again. And at this point, I feel like I'm in Finding Nemo. You know, like how many more things can go wrong in this moment? And I finally get off of I-40. I get onto Long Shoals because that was as close as I could get. I get off of I-40. I get on 26. I had to choose between that and Bent Creek. And I was like, Bent Creek's closer to the ground. I want to go up. And so I get on 26. I follow that. I get as far as Long Shoals. I get off at Long Shoals. I drive past here. And I'm like, I don't think we're having church this week. Again, still have no clue how bad it is. I finally get to Sweeten Creek. There are trees everywhere. I found out later that if I'd gotten there 45 minutes earlier, I wouldn't have been able to get home from that point. But it was fine because I'd already decided that I was going to abandon the car and all of my possessions and walk at this point. But somebody had cut through enough where you could have one lane on Sweeten Creek. And if you spend a lot of time there, you know that that road should be 4 lanes. We're at 1, okay? So it's dangerous, and people are crazy at this point. I get it. I'm crazy, too. And so I'm trying to figure out how to drive this tiny car around these trees that I can't see, and I'm like, wouldn't it be terrible for this to be the thing that stands in the way? Thankfully, I make it home. I pull into the parking lot of my apartment. I leave everything, including my keys, in the car, and I run up the stairs, I knock on the door because it's locked and I left my keys in the car, and it opens and Ashley's there, and I just like throw myself into the apartment. I hug her, I say hi to my kids, and I leave and I go into my bedroom and I throw myself down on the bed and I just cry for 2 hours. I don't speak a word. I can't. My wife is asking me questions about like what happened and I can't answer. And she's trying to make them more simple because we've learned how to deal with like panic and anxiety, and she could see it in me. And she starts asking me simple questions like, what color is the bed sheet that you're laying on? And I don't know. I know the answer, but my mouth won't work. And for 2 hours, I felt so stuck right there just crying. And so can I tell you, I understand what it's like to be in the chaos. The panic, it's so real. It's so heavy. The fear of not knowing if I was going to make it home. My youngest daughter at some point, very nonchalantly, said, yeah, we kind of thought you might be dead. And just hearing her say that, because I told my mother-in-law I'd be home in 2 hours, and I got home 5 hours later. It was terrifying. And that's how chaos can be, right? Chaos can be terrifying. It's often confusing. It's exhausting. It's uncomfortable. And it's always, always formative. It shapes us. The unfortunate truth is that chaos is part of life. The question is not if a storm is going to come, but it's when will the storm come? And the good news is, we don't have to be swept away by the storms. There's hope. And when we're in the midst of it, we have to remember that his presence will bring us peace, his people will bring us strength, and his purpose can bring us hope. So let's talk about how do we navigate this chaos when we're in the midst of it. The first thing we have to do is we got to find peace in his presence. Find peace in his presence. If you've been with us for this series so far, you know that maybe you've recognized a pattern here. Every week, the first point has been something to do with clinging to our faith, something to do with holding fast to Jesus and holding fast to the truth of the gospel and how he loves and cares for us and brings us peace no matter what's going on. And that is so, so necessary and so critical when we're in the midst of chaos. We've got to remember that we're never alone. In Mark 4, we see a situation where the apostles dealt with something like that. And there was this day where they were out with Jesus doing the work of the ministry. They were healing people. They were feeding people. They were restoring sight to the blind. They were doing the things. They were seeing miracles happen in front of them. And then they get to the end of the day and they're tired. And it's time for them to move to the next phase of their journey. And so they're going to go on a boat, right? And so it says, when evening came, Jesus said to the disciples, let's go to the other side. It says, leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. And a furious squall came up, a storm, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern. Yellow, okay. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. I think it's interesting to note that they were terrified in the storm, but then it restates that they were terrified after the storm. Like they just watched God just like calm this thing, and they're afraid. They're like, whoa, what in the world is happening now? But the first thing we have to do in the chaos, the first thing that we need to do is remember our faith. We remember who we serve. We remember who we follow. We serve the God who created all of this. He's above all of it. He speaks and it happens. He says and it is, and he commands the winds and the waves, and he looks at this moment, this storm, and he says, peace, be still. And I kind of wonder, like, yeah, it says he was talking to the wind and the waves, but I also wonder if he was talking to the apostles. They're freaking out. These are experienced fishermen. This was no like Tuesday rainstorm, right? This was a storm. They were afraid for their lives. Experienced on the water fishermen are afraid for their lives. And Jesus looks and he just says, hey, chill out. No big deal. And all of a sudden there's this calm that goes over the whole thing because he was challenging them to remember their faith, to remember who's in the boat with them, to remember whose presence is beside them. And the trick here is he didn't say that their faith would end the storm. He said, that their faith could have brought them peace in the midst of it. So I'm not saying that by remembering our faith that the storm is going to change, but I am saying that when we know that Jesus is riding with us, then we will find peace in the midst of it. When the world around me is filling with chaos, I have to cling to my faith, and that faith can give me peace that passes all understanding. People will ask you why you're so calm, and it won't make sense. It won't make sense to them. It won't make sense to you. But at the end of the day, it's just because we know the one who calms the seas is the one that resides in our hearts and rules over our life. I can lay my fears aside and put my trust in him. And that's so important. On my journey home, right, my maps weren't working. And as this panic and anxiety set in, I could hear in my brain like all these thoughts of just like never making it. Like, you're not going to make it home. You're going to die out here. The worst you're going to die. Best case, you're trying to convince that minivan family to help you forage for food because you don't have any tools in this rental car, right? Like, my brain is just filled with all these stuff. You're not going to make it. You're never going to see the people that you love again. But I remember also at the same time hearing this loud voice screaming, "You will make it. You will not lose control. You have a sound mind, a spirit of power and love. You will get through this. You will make it to the other side." And I realized later that it was actually my own voice, not in my head. I was literally screaming these things out loud in the car. I bet if anyone was coming the other way, I would have looked like a crazy person. But it was all I could do to keep my hands on the wheel and my car facing forward. Even though physically I felt like I was drowning, it was that faith, that foundation that kept me going. The first thing we have to do in the midst of the chaos is remember who Jesus is and to know, to be confident in the fact that we can find peace in his presence. And the next thing we got to do is find strength in his people. Peace in his presence, strength in his people. Here's a little secret about me, a little confession. I do not like to ask for help. Okay, and there's probably a few of you that chuckled in the room because you know that about me, and you're probably the people in my life that are always like, you need to ask for help, you need to reach out, let somebody help you, blah, blah, blah. And I don't want to, okay? I want to do it myself, and I just don't love it. I don't know why. It's something I'm working on, I promise. But the truth is, without the people in this room that crack that little smile and regularly encourage me to ask for help, I would be significantly less effective and significantly more exhausted. We need people in our lives that can help us in times of need. Here's the thing about my trip home. I was isolated, but I wasn't isolating. I didn't put myself there. I didn't choose to push everybody away, right? But I was in that moment. I was in that situation. And so sometimes we're going to get in a situation like that where we are isolated, even though we're not the ones that did the isolating, right? I was so alone. I had no cell phone service, no GPS, no Spotify. I was literally alone with my thoughts. And as previously stated, those thoughts were not positive. I needed people. Sometimes the truth is that the isolation isn't our fault, but what do we do then? In those moments, we've got to look around for the people that might be in the midst of it with us. There's a story in Acts chapter 27 and 28. And in Acts 27, we see Paul is on a boat. He's on this ship, and there's this crazy storm that lasts for several days, and they're fighting against this storm. And finally, the ship goes down, and they have to swim to shore. They're completely shipwrecked. They're completely lost, and they wind up on this island. And it picks up in, they haven't eaten. They're soaking wet. They're all alone. They don't know where they are. And it picks up in Acts 28, verse 1. It says, "Once safely on shore, we found that the island was called Malta. The islanders showed us unusual kindness. They built a fire and welcomed us all because it was raining and cold." We see this island, this culture of people that come around them, that make them feel welcome. They build a fire. They feed them. They provide for their needs. They give them assistance and help. And it's in this moment that Paul realizes, like, man, we couldn't survive without this assistance. And it goes on later in verse 7. Paul continues. He says, "There was an estate nearby that belonged to the chief official of the island." Yes, I skipped his name on purpose. "He welcomed us to his home and showed us generous hospitality for 3 days. His father was sick in bed, suffering from fever and dysentery. Paul went to see him and prayed. Whoa, I'm all over the place. See him and after prayer, there it is. After prayer, placed his hands on him and healed him. When this happened, the rest of the sick on the island came and were cured. They honored us in many ways. And when we were ready to set sail, they furnished us with the supplies we needed." Paul didn't have that community going in. He didn't get shipwrecked and call his best buddy who happened to live on Malta. He looked around. He saw that there were people near him that could help and built a relationship with them from that way. Sometimes the help we need, the people we need, they're going to come from unexpected places. I ended up on this dirt road with this van in front of me. And at first, I saw help in the form of this van in front of me because I thought, well, at least there's other people here. We can figure this out together. I'm confident, right? But then we saw this truck guy, right? Like this dude in a truck. And for me, that was really a turning point in this whole journey. It was really a moment that stood out that changed the situation. Because I told you, I'm bad at asking for help in general, but I refuse to ask for directions. It is a hard no. Like it's a solid line. I'm not gonna stop and ask for directions. We got GPS for that. We don't need directions. I'll tell you what, if there had been an open gas station that way, I'd have been the first in there buying a paper map and a magnifying glass. Like I needed help. And you know what? That guy in the truck was the first person to offer that help. And I'm not saying that that truck dude was an angel or anything like that. Based on his linguistic choices, I'm pretty confident he was not. But what I am saying is that the Lord knew what I needed and who I needed and how I needed help. And I believe that he brought those people into my path in just the right time. The truth is, when we find ourselves alone, we just need to look around. See, that family made me feel a little bit safer. The man in the truck was the first human interaction I had since I realized that I was in some trouble. He was the first person to tell me that what I was trying to accomplish was possible. And I believed him. Because of that conversation with that guy, who probably owned several chainsaws based on his history of events, right? Like my hope, my resolve, my purpose were all renewed in that one moment when he just said, listen, if you take a left instead of a right, you're gonna make it. You can do this. You can get through to the other side. Don't isolate, right? But when you find yourselves isolated, look for the people that God might be bringing into your path to help you. It's so easy to think, I don't know anybody out here. I'm alone. Let me just head down and power through. I bet you I would have gone to the right. Who knows where I would be right now? Maybe Robert's house, maybe somewhere else, right? Don't go through the chaos alone. Find peace in his presence and find strength in his people. And the last thing is this, find hope in his purpose. Find hope in his purpose. I gotta tell you, again, a little more confession. There came a point in this journey home that I was incredibly angry. I mean, I was furious. I felt like I didn't deserve to be in this situation. And I was mad at everybody. I was mad at God for the storm. I was mad at the conference for booking me on Thursday instead of Wednesday. I was mad at Ashley for telling me it was safe to come home. I was mad at I was mad at T-Mobile because my phone service wasn't working. I was mad at the idea of GPS. I don't even know, like, it's global positioning except for right here. Like, I was angry, y'all, but mostly, if I'm being completely honest, I was mad at myself. In that moment, I was mad at myself for not going back when I realized that there was trouble. I was mad at myself for being stubborn. I was mad at myself for thinking that I was bigger than this issue, right? That I kept going forward. And in that moment, I mean, I kept thinking over, I should have stayed. I shouldn't be here. I should have stayed in Knoxville. I should have stayed one more day. I could have waited this thing out and blah, blah, blah. I was like just saying all these words, right? And maybe in that moment, I would have gone back, but I did not know where back was, and so I couldn't. I'm so thankful that I didn't. I'm so thankful that I kept pushing forward. I'm so thankful that I refused to let the circumstances stop me from continuing to pursue the goal to get home, to see my family, to see my friends, to see my community, and to step into the mess and help others get through it. And sometimes the truth is uncomfortable. Sometimes the only way through the chaos is through the chaos. Sometimes the only way we get to the other side of the storm is to walk into the storm, to face it head on and to fight with everything we've got. And when we see these things happening, when we see ourselves surrounded by chaos, when we realize we're in a storm, we've got options, right? We can respond in one of two ways. We can respond like a cow. Okay, cows are traditionally dumb animals, right? Good burgers. Or we can respond like a bison, a little tougher, slightly upgraded version of a cow. There's one major difference between a cow and a bison when it comes to storms and chaos. When a cow finds itself in a storm, it tries to run away from it. It turns around and tries to run away from the storm. Again, traditionally dumb animals, they are not as fast as the storm. And so what happens? The storm catches them, and they spend more time in the storm because they're trying to run away from something they can't outrun. A bison, on the other hand, when it finds itself in a storm, it runs into the storm because it knows that if I go against the storm, then it's going to end faster. I can get through to the other side. So what would have happened for me if I decided to go back, right? I could have gone back to Knoxville, could have waited one more day, You know what would have been waiting for me the next day? Same drive home. I-40 wasn't getting fixed overnight. It's still not all the way fixed, right? I mean, like, it's crazy what the amount of destruction that this thing did. We've got that choice sometimes. We've got to either go into the storm and face it with everything we've got or try to outrun it, knowing that it's going to find us eventually. The question for us is always, do we run away or do we run through? Do we step back or do we step up and step in? Because the truth is, the world is full of chaos, right? There's always going to be chaos. There's pain. There's confusion. There's heartbreak. There's sadness. It's all around us all the time. And there are people around us in our lives, people that we're connected to, who are in the midst of storms right now that they may never get out of unless we, as the church, as the people that love them, have the confidence and the courage to step in and pull them out. And so, I'll be honest. Sharing this story today was very hard. It's terrifying, honestly. If you know a lot about my journey since we moved here, we kind of started in a season of chaos, and I was working on dealing with some of that and all of what was going on there and been struggling a little with panic and anxiety and all these feelings. And then the storm came along and it's like add PTSD on top of that little mix and you get something that's really, really, really fun. And it's scary to even touch on those things again, right? And there were moments where Pastor John Mark offered me an out, said, you don't have to do this. And there were a couple of times when I almost took him up on it. But I'm so glad I didn't, because I refuse to let that storm define me or silence me. I know who got me through that storm, who got me through the other side, and it was the Lord. It was Jesus who was walking beside me. I know that. He got me through it. He can and he will get you through your storms as well. It might seem hopeless sometimes, but our God specializes in bringing hope where there once was none. We serve a God who steps into the mess, who steps into the storms and walks alongside of us, bringing us calm in the chaos. We serve that God. He will see you through to the other side. There was another storm that the disciples experienced. It happened again in Matthew 14. Same situation. They're doing the ministry. They're doing the work. They're doing the things. They're seeing miracles happen. It's incredible. It's a great day. And Jesus is like, hey, we need to go to the other side of the lake. You guys go ahead. I'm going to go up on this mountain and pray for a few minutes. They get in the boat, right? This is Matthew 14, verse 22. It says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he dismissed them, he went up on the mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance away from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said. They cried out in fear, but Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Lord, if it is you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. When he saw the wind, he was afraid, and he began to sink. He cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? When they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. Guys, the disciples knew about storms. They knew it. They understood it. They knew what it was like. They'd been in one with Jesus before. And yet in this moment, they see Jesus walking on the water towards them and they freak out all over again. They get scared. They panic one more time. They think it's a ghost. They're like, it's more likely that it's a ghost than it's the Son of God who's walking over here. Like, I mean, I know we just saw him do some crazy things, but walking on water, probably a ghost. Even Peter, he takes this bold moment. He gets out of the boat, walks on the water towards them immediately again, freaks out. He's walking on the water. He's standing on top of it. He's like, oh, this is probably a temporary thing. And so like, boom, he starts to sink. And Jesus rescues them. And again, the storm stops. Things get calm. And they finally look at Jesus and say, truly, you're the Son of God. And I read that story and I get so frustrated with the disciples. I'm like, how'd they not get it? Hello? Obviously. You've seen it. You've been with him for years. You've been watching what he's doing. You're standing on water right now. How do you miss that? They missed it because they don't have the luxury that you and I have when we engage with Scripture. They didn't get to just turn a page. It says they were fighting this thing all night. They were stuck in this storm all night. They were stuck in this storm for hours and hours and hours. They're tired. They're exhausted. They're wondering if it's ever going to end. And then they see maybe some hope, but maybe they're just too exhausted to think it's possible. We get to turn the page and fast forward through 20 years of Joseph being in slavery. We get to turn a page and fast forward through 40 years of the Israelites wandering around after getting free from Egypt. We get to turn the page and skip over 400 years of silence from God between the Old Testament and the New Testament. They didn't have that luxury. They were in it. They were stuck in it. And I know that sometimes in a moment where we're living in the chaos, where we're stuck in it, we don't know if it's ever going to end. And we wonder if God still sees us, if God still hears us, if he's still real, if we're ever going to make it out alive. But man, sometimes those stories we have to remember took place over years and years. And I told you my story about driving home from Knoxville in probably 20 minutes. But those 5 hours that day felt like an eternity. I can tell you this story now because I know how it ended. I made it home. I saw my family, but those 4 hours felt like an eternity. I didn't know how or when or even if it would end. And maybe that's where you're at right now. Maybe you're sitting in the midst of chaos and you don't see an end in sight. Hear me. This too shall pass. You will make it to the other side. We serve a God who loves you. He sees you. He knows you. You're never abandoned. You're never forsaken. You are never alone. He is with you in it. The chaos will end. And when it does, God can redeem your story and use it to pull someone else out of theirs if you'll let him. And I know today we're talking about what to do in the midst of the chaos and in the moments when we're surrounded by it. But can I just give you a little bonus tip here, a little bonus point? Let God use that story. Let God use that story. See, over the summer, I got to share this story with about 700 students at summer camp. And to be honest with you, it was harder then than it is today. And it was incredibly difficult. The rest of the day was just, man, honestly felt like a nightmare. But we talked about so many things that day. We talked about trauma and pain in our past, and how do we have a sound mind? How do we take our thoughts captive? How do we make them obedient to Christ? And how do we move forward after something like that? And afterwards, I got to talk to student after student after student who said that they've been suffering silently for years and were able to begin healing in that moment. And I got to tell you, I don't think it would have made it any less difficult. But I think if I had known then how God would use that story now, I could have found some peace in the midst of it. So when you're in a storm, man, you got to know that God is already at work to use that story for good, to grow his kingdom, to advance the gospel, to make people come to know him. Hurricane Helene destroyed so much. It tore down so much. But you know what actually built some things? You know what it built? It built hope in this city. It built a sense of community that has been missing for a long time. It built a curiosity to the gospel. Why are these people serving me with no goal in mind, like no cost? Why are people doing this? It built an openness to the gospel that this city has never seen before. I am convinced of this, that this storm has done some good. Man, navigating chaos is so hard, but when we're in it, when we do it well, when we walk through it and follow Jesus, hope can arise where there was once only despair. So if you're in the midst of chaos right now, or if you're looking ahead and knowing that, man, chaos is probably going to come again, I want you to remember that Jesus is with you and we can find peace in his presence. And we don't have to face the chaos alone. We can find strength in his people, and the chaos will end, and we can find hope in his purpose. Don't stop there. I mean, let God use your chaos to make an impact. The truth is eternity is hanging in the balance. And there's a beautiful thing about the redemptive nature of Jesus. He can use any past experience, any pain, any hurt, any relationship, anything that you are willing to give to him. He can use it to advance his kingdom. He can use it to introduce other people into his peace and into his presence. His heart breaks when we walk through tragedy, but he can use it. He can use it all. He will use your story. He'll use your pain, he'll use your storm so that you can look across at somebody in their eyes and say, I've been there. It was terrible, I know how it feels. I made it through, and you will too. And I'll walk beside you every step of the way. Church, let's be a people who keep our eyes fixed on the truth. When we find ourselves in chaos, when we see someone else in it, we run into the storm. Let's be a people who step into that chaos so that others can find peace. Let's allow God to redeem our pain, calm our storms, and use our stories to lead others towards hope. And if you're in the middle of your own storm today, I want you to know that peace is possible. If you don't yet know this Jesus, I got to tell you, he's the only one that can bring you true peace in the midst of the chaos. And so I want to invite you today to come to know him, to surrender your life to him, to allow him to step into that chaos and bring you through to the other side. It starts with a simple prayer, a simple conversation with him, and then it's followed up by a journey in which we get to become more and more like him with every passing day. And if that's you in this moment, I'd invite you to just say the simple prayer with me. God, I need you. And I confess I've been trying to do it on my own. Lord, would you come into my life? Would you forgive me of my sins? And shape me into your image, God. I will follow you from this day forward. In your name I pray.